Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed in Radio DMG may or may not be the views and opinions of the DMGI's family of sites. All music used in this podcast is the property of whoever made it, and no copyright infringement is intended. God bless this albatross, and hold on tight for the awesome you're about to receive.
It's good to be the king.
And welcome to today's edition of Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and you're listening to Radio DMG on November 29th, 2011. For today's show, we've got a couple interviews. We've got an interview with Jamie Markey and an interview with Michael Sinter-Nicholas. And that's what we're just going to have, those two interviews. Sorry. There is a little bit of newsity. And there's so little of it, though, that it's going to take me a couple seconds just to tell you it. Here's what's happening. The update that was supposed to come out on November 30th for the Nintendo 3DS has been pushed back to December 8th. This is the update that adds the video recording service, as well as the brand new Street Pass options and the little sequel to Find Me, and the 3DS to 3DS transferring, among other little bug fixes and such. Apparently, the reason given for the delay is internal testing and internal testing. So that's pretty much it. Also, apparently, the Nintendo 3DS did pretty well on Black Friday, selling almost 500,000 units. The Wii actually sold 500,000 plus units on Black Friday as well. So, judging from the sales numbers, it looks like Nintendo still needs to sell at least 300,000 units in the United States before the end of March in order to beat the record set by the Nintendo DS. Other than that, that is pretty much it. There is no other news. So let's cut to the chase and get to our features. Now, a little word of caution on these features. These particular features are done as group interviews, meaning it's myself and maybe one or two other people. The Jamie Markey one has myself and another person, and then another person joins a little bit later and messes up the rotation, but what can you do? It happens. So, that's about it. We've got two interviews for you today, maybe a little musical interlude or so. And we're good to go. Thank you for listening to Radio DMG for today. We're going to go ahead and get to those interviews. I'll see you right back after we're done with those features. Welcome back to Radio DMG and
ERJ Productions.
ERJ Productions. My name is Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth. I'm here with
Little Loco
from ERJ Productions and
Jamie Markey.
And do you want to ask the first question or should I?
You should.
I'll go first. Okay. So, who are you? What do you do?
I am, that's such a deep question. I don't even know now. Specifically, I work for Funimation, and I'm a voice actor, and I do audio digital writing, dub writing, and sometimes directing for Funimation. So I've been in, at this point, I have over 100 characters. I've been doing it for 8 years now, I think. My first character was in Fruits Basket, and I can't even tell you what my last character was, because it's not been revealed. So that's what I do. That's who I am. That's what I do.
So you say how long have you actually been voice acting, just voice acting, not directing anything, just voice acting?
Just voice acting? I have a degree in theater, so I've been acting most of my life. And I started acting immediately afterwards. So I don't really differentiate the two. Specifically for Funimation, 8 years. I've been doing voice work for them for 8 years. But I feel like acting is acting.
So how long have you been acting?
Well, now you're getting into my age. Oh. Sir, how dare you? I have been acting professionally for probably 12 years.
Yeah. And, okay, I'm kind of interested in some of the character works. For your role in Sekire's, how did you feel that you actually had to play a character that was literally going behind everybody's back and trying to win just to keep their Ashikabi alive?
Oh, well, she was so complex. She didn't really want to do what she had to do, but she had to do it. And I think we've all been in situations like that. And just to really be torn like that and not have a choice gave her a lot of inner workings that you don't always get with characters. So I loved that. I loved that complexity and the challenge to kind of convey, I don't really want to hurt you, but I'm gonna kill you now. So, yeah, that was, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I like it when they're layered like that. It's a good time.
What was your first theater production?
Ever in my life?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I played a butterfly in the first grade.
Oh.
And I flittered on stage. It was to, what was it? Are You My Mother was the book. And we made it into a little play. It was fantastic. And I fluttered on stage. And apparently, I hung out longer than any of the other butterfly, who I'm still friends with. And she's like, yeah. You stay longer. I don't know why I remember that. That was my very first theatrical experience. Professionally, it was probably something Shakespeare. I can't remember what. I'm going to go with Much Ado About Nothing, because I've been in that a lot. Most actors have. It's a common one. Mm-hmm.
If you want to take just a second, introduce Ivan Tech here.
Late edition.
Yes, I'm Jared Sanchez with Ivy Tech. Sorry for our late intrusion.
This is very exciting. And by the end of this, there's going to be 30 people in here. It'll be great.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Question.
Well, how did you get to NBK? This is my first year seeing you here, so what's your role? I'm sure you had a choice of many other places to go.
I didn't have anything this weekend. Oh. And at this point in my life, I don't do conventions every weekend or anything like that. And so I had the free weekend. And I think it was after Robert Cullen couldn't do it, someone recommended me, and they asked, and I was like, yes! Yes! Because I only ever hear how awesome this convention is. And like the minute I got off the plane, I knew like things are going to be different here. And it's been, I love it.
What do you mean by different? How is it different from other conventions?
Not all of them, because some, but it just, everything was organized. Like, I knew where I was going, what I was doing, how, and if I didn't know where I was going, I knew I just needed to stay where I was, and someone was going to come get me and take care of it. And, you know, just the care and the concern that they take with not only the guests, but, you know, the attendees and how much fun everybody's having. And just, it's such a massive, massive convention to have so incredibly organized. I just love it. It's so great. And the food in the green room is out of control. It's so good.
Okay. Another question we had, which character that you played recently, like from Strike Witches or Spice and Wolf or even Sekire's, do you feel like you're closely, you have a personality that's close to it, and which one would you possibly prefer to be in real life?
In real life, out of my recent characters. Let me think. Well, Chloe and Spice and Wolf, as much as I understand why she went the route that she went and it's what made fun of to play her and write her, because I wrote that show too. I don't think that I would necessarily try to kill somebody just because they didn't want to be with me. And then, let's see, I'm not really big on fighting and having my clothes fall off. I know it's surprising, so that probably not is me. let's see, close to me. You know who I really relate to? This like darker part of me relates to Satsukitani from Heaven's Lost Property. Mikako Satsukitani, that's her name. It's hard to keep them straight after. It's like, she is kind of naughty and sounds very naughty. And it's always kind of, she's a little bit of a sociopath. I'm not that way, but she's very fun and like will look at even the worst situation, she's going to have a good time with it, even if it's really awful. And so I relate to that. I'm not necessarily evil, but I relate to having a good time no matter what, if you couldn't guess.
This might be a little bit heavy, but
uh-oh.
We're at, yeah.
Watch out, everybody hold down the fort.
Oh, okay.
It's going to get heavy.
Actually, you have no idea. No, actually, yeah. Actually, tomorrow is the anniversary of... tomorrow is September 11th, the 10th anniversary of the September 11th attacks. Mm-hmm. Did you have any opinions on these, or where were you when those happened?
Well, I probably have the same opinions that everybody has on them. That, you know, it's awful. I was in Chicago at the time, and I was living just north of Wrigleyville, and they evacuated Wrigleyville, and so I went up to a little town, Highland Park, which is where I was working at the time, and hung out there for the day, and then came back, took my cats, went up there and hung out, and it was all clear. And then I came back, and my mom kept trying to call me, and didn't really have a trusty cell phone at the time, because, you know, it was in the early 2000s. And, yeah, it was really, it was kind of scary. I'd never been away from home, and I, from Oklahoma City specifically, and the first month I was away, that's when it happened. And so it was a little, it was very shocking and eye-opening and horrible. Yeah. I can't believe it's been so long. Doesn't it seem, like, weird that it's been...
Yeah, it feels just like high school.
Yeah, yeah.
So long.
It's been a while.
It's been a while.
Yeah.
How are the cats?
Well, one of them died of cancer.
Ooh.
It was very sad. But the other one's good. Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. I'm just saying this because I just... It's hard not to take notice of you. Especially last night, I noticed red, and red shoes. Those bright, bright...
Oh, last night.
Where do you get your fashion sense from? I mean, you know, just... You project this vivaciousness and energy, and I see that also.
Oh, wow, thanks. Heavens! I like your questions. My fashion sense, I don't know. I have a very classic fashion sense. You know, when I was talking with a friend, I don't know if you guys know Trina Nishimura. She's a really good friend of mine, and we were talking about fashion and stuff like that and how we trend totally different. And I was like, I think, like, if I had a fashion icon that I would relate to, it would be, like, Elizabeth Taylor, because she's very classic and kind of went through different phases and stuff like that, still maintained, like, this classicness. And she's like, yeah, I think I'm Gwen Stefani. I was like, yeah, I can see that. Was, yeah, so I just, I'm anything classic, and I like some funky pieces, depending upon the season. But I like to throw that into update, but if I have, like, one really nice piece that will last me forever, like those red shoes are going to be fabulous forever.
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, yeah. So that's kind of my style. And I like shoes a lot. And I wear heels, and some people give me flack about wearing heels at conventions, although I will be wearing flip-flops tomorrow. But I'm not even 5'4", and I am also claustrophobic. So when I'm in a big crowd like this, feeling like everybody's over me, I get a little panicky.
Oh.
So I actually wear heels to feel a little more in control. It's weird.
No, that's great.
Does it make sense? Like,
Yeah, totally makes sense.
So that's why I wear heels a lot. Really high.
Sorry, I'm pretty tall, so I don't understand that feeling.
Yeah. I am the tallest girl in my family. So there's that. I'm proud of that.
When you actually walk around these conventions, how do you feel when you see someone dress up as one of your characters? Like,
I love it. I think we all love it. Anybody who says they don't love it is lying to your face. It's fantastic. Because it's not only that they watch the show, it's that they love a specific character that you did the voice for. And, yeah, I normally will run up to them and say, can I get a picture with you? And then I tell them, and then I'm like, oh, it's really fun. It's always very fun.
Have you ever run to it where a guy has dressed up as one of your female characters?
Oh, not yet, but I'd love to. Can you imagine a guy switchblade? That would be hilarious. Someone do that!
Oh.
Okay. Someone do that. Okay.
Sorry. Oh. Actually, I had a question about, like, since you work with Funimation, you work in Texas, right?
Mm-hmm.
And have you done any work in, like, California? Right?
Not.
No? Oh, okay. So, oh, okay. So this one's...
I'm strictly a Texas gal right
just
now.
Just Texas.
Yeah.
Okay. So, The question was about like the difference between working in California and Texas, but I'll just simplify it to a different one. So, have you worked on any video games yet?
A handful, not a whole lot. I haven't done a whole lot of video games.
Which ones?
Either. You would ask me that. I don't know the names of the games. I have a confession. I'm not a gamer. If Mario was not involved, I don't understand. See, that he's wearing a Mario t-shirt. He's wearing a Mario t-shirt, which is great, but I think it's because my entire family, my parents are huge gamers, for real. Like, I'm like, Mom, you need to put it down. Stop it. So there's some games that I like to hide because they drive me crazy. Portal, I think it's awesome and the idea is awesome, but watching someone play Portal makes me want to pull out my eyelashes. It's awful. Game's fantastic. Nothing against the game. I just don't want to watch people play it. And that's my life. When I'm ever at my parents' house, they always play video games, and I get to sit there and watch it. So I don't normally... I do have a Wii, and I used it for like 2 weeks, and I still have it.
I think a lot of people did that.
Yeah. And my brother lives with me. He's got a 360, and he's always online and stuff like that. But I'm like, that looks like fun. To go out. So, but you know, also working from home and writing the dubs, all I do is look at a TV screen or computer screen all day. So when it comes time, free time, I don't necessarily want to look. I don't watch a lot of TV because of that either. Maybe I just don't want to think on top of it. So go out with my friends and hang out. I'm sorry. I know it's not very exciting. I'm ashamed.
Oh, it's okay.
It's okay.
That means you have a life.
We're going to go with that. Yuck. I have a life.
So, you just mentioned how you write your own dialogue, your own dubbings.
Uh-huh.
Is that pretty common?
I write for Funimation.
Okay.
If I happen to get cast in a show, then that's particularly awesome if I happen to be writing that show, because then I know exactly how I want it said because I'm a writer. I generally get comedies. Mm-hmm. To write, and so I have a little more freedom with the text and stuff like that, but so the lines sometimes are a little more original, but yeah, it's, I luck out a couple, like Hitalia, Chuck Huber, and I wrote Hitalia together, and so it was really cool to be on the same page with my character, the narrator, be on the same page. Mm-hmm. With what she was and who she was, and then be able to deliver it in the booth. So much fun. So much fun.
Going back to Spice and Wolf, mm-hmm. How did you feel that had a European setting instead of actual Japanese setting, mm-hmm. a traditional one? How did you feel about that?
I thought it was great. You know, it changed up the setting. It changed up a lot writing-wise. It gave me a little more flexibility. You know, I didn't have to worry if anybody was going to get upset because of honorifics were taken out or anything like that. Also, because it was in this imaginary world, I didn't have to study money like other kinds of currencies. It was made up
like
currencies.
Of the coins.
Yeah, so I could just follow that and streamline that and make sure that was all correct without having to Google and do... So I'm an actor, I'm a writer, I'm not a mathematician. Yeah, but so I loved it. And just the scene, all of that, just beautiful. I love that show. I love that show so much. And at the time, we didn't think it would be as popular because it's very character-centric and it's about trade and there's no fighting or anything like that. But the way people really connected with those characters and loved them the way that we love them, and by we, I mean, you know, Michael Tatum and Brandon Palencia and Joel McDonald, who directed it as well. We loved it. Loved it. I mean, second season's coming out or out, and Chuck Huber and I wrote that season together. So we were really writing partners for a while.
Which do you find more challenging, writing comedy or the more serious ones? Or, which do you find more challenging when you're writing them? And which ones haven't you written yet that you'd love to work on? Like the type of scripts, the types of genres.
You know, I've really lucked in to comedies, my forte, I think, and I love it. And it's not, I would say, difficult for me. I like the feeling of like knowing a joke and being able to fit it in somewhere. That is awesome. I love that. love writing dramas too, though, because I really like getting into emotion stuff and deep into that and letting people be cathartic in the booth and all of that stuff, which is fun too. I'm not really big on fighting shows because if I watch someone fight over and over, I get anxious. I'm a lover, not a fighter. And I'll watch the fighting shows, and I like it when they fight in a live sport. I don't like sports that are fighting, but hockey, fighting, awesome. Just fighting, not awesome. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. But so, you know, and I'm just not, I mean, that's not, I'm not the best at that. The most challenging for me is time coding. And that is, we have the video and it has the hour, minute, second frame.
The sync point?
And you have to sync up that number to when the mouth opens or when a reaction is. And it's just tedious. It takes a really long time. I always get exhausted. That's the hardest thing to get through is just that. And it's important, I think, it's important for me to do it so that I can get my eye on the script an extra time. But it just takes forever. And then it's like, I can't wait till I'm done with this so I can just start writing it. Yeah.
Have you worked on anything original, or if you had a dream of an original IP that's animated within your realm of possibility? If this is too big of a question, it's okay.
It's huge. It's huge. Like, you know what I would love to see is, you know, Romeo and Juliet. It was amazing, the combination and the way that they used a lot of actual Shakespearean text and stuff like that. And I got to be Ophelia in that. Which I was like, when am I ever going to be Ophelia in Romeo and Juliet? Yes. So I really liked that. And I think there are so many stage plays that would make brilliant anime.
I can definitely see that.
You know what I mean?
Just embellished in that way.
Yeah, because theater is extreme. And, you know, to have the freedom to do whatever you wanted with that show, that would be awesome.
So, Into the Woods, the anime, right?
That would be awesome. How cool would that be?
Stephen Sondheim.
Yeah, that would be great. Mm-hmm. Yeah, something like that. That's a good question.
Yeah.
I'm going to think about that.
Oh, she might have to text you back or email me. Hey, I find your answer.
And this, and then it will never stop, so.
Oh, no problem.
Going back to Strike Witches, what did you actually think of the actual storyline, how it played out?
It was fine, I liked it. What do you mean? Great! Kudos.
On the sense that, like, it just started with the getting the father's letter, and she's like, oh, he wants me to go do this, and then it builds into this dramatic, okay, we gotta defeat these guys, and then how it ends up at the end. Another letter, what the hell?
Yeah.
The whole point of her becoming more mature, understanding everything. Do you think for a 1950s setting that was pretty off the ball? Or was
it
just like...
And I know, like, every story's going to get flack for whatever reason. But isn't that life? Like, you expect something to happen, and then you grow, and you develop, and you change as a person, and what you thought was going to happen never happens, but that doesn't mean you didn't grow. So the story may not be about the outcome, it's about her. Growth. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Hi, real quick question on this actually. If you didn't have voice acting, where do you think you'd be right now? If you didn't have the ADR work and the voice acting?
I would probably be doing more theater.
More theater?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And actually, if I could throw in when we're here, since you've worked theater, you've most likely worked musical theater. Is there a favorite musical that you have?
I've only ever done one musical. Only one, and I just did it last weekend.
Oh, what was it?
It was a workshop for a show called Debutante Warriors, and it's based on a comic book, and it's these debutantes that fight crime, and it's ridiculous and huge and like an 80s kind of... It was really fun. I will tell you my ultimate roles, which explains a lot about me. I would like to be Adol Annie in Oklahoma and Lady Macbeth. Both of those.
Could you sing us a little bit from that thing?
No.
Oh, okay. No singing?
No.
Okay.
Even when the cameras are off, right? Off the record?
I only sing at karaoke.
Oh.
No, seriously, like that was the first time I'd ever sung on stage, was last.
Well, speaking of karaoke, are there events at conventions you actually like to participate in? Like, are you going to show up karaoke tonight?
I don't know. It depends on... I know there's some people that might be going to downtown Denver, and I do like...
Oh, okay.
To when I can see the town that I'm in. So I'm not sure, but I love karaoke. I love Most of us Funimation gals and guys love karaoke. We have all done that quite a bit together. Yeah, Korean karaoke is the best because you get your own room.
Oh, I've done that.
It's the best. You don't have to wait. Other ones, I like to sit in on other, you know, panels, people that I know, and see what they're doing on their panels that are different and fun, and you know, get a little inspiration.
But you definitely like to take time out to enjoy the city that you're being posted in.
I mean, I'm traveling. I'm going to take advantage of it, you know. I'm going to go to some good restaurants, and I'm going to... This time, I actually got to see some friends that I haven't seen since I was in Chicago. Or, no, well, 5 years, something like that. But they live north about an hour, so I got to drive through and some mountains and see what I was doing. And that was really cool, just to, like, see the land and then to see them. And that was really neat. But... Yeah, I do like to see the city wherever I go, especially if I've never been there.
Other than the narrator in Haltalia, was there any kind of role you were hoping for in Haltalia, or they just said, here's a role if you want?
Well, we had to audition. I wanted the narrator. The moment I wrote the first line for the narrator, I was like, I would like to be her. And then I talked to Chuck, I was like, hey! Let's powwow about this narrator and make her a little more opinionated. So we talked about that, and then he wrote one of my favorite lines. It just grew from there to just be... She was a narrator, but she had an opinion on what she was talking about. And that's not very... That doesn't happen very often, so I loved it. It was really fun. And in the third and fourth seasons, I guess, I get to make fun of some of the other characters. So, but you know, that show too, hearing lines that I wrote, other people say lines I wrote, it's really cool. If it like gets a laugh and stuff like that, but it's fun. I love Italia. It's fantastic. And Negima too, it's the same thing.
What was the line?
Which one?
Oh, you said the line there, like,
my favorite? What's our rating here?
We can do not safe for work tags. What do you guys do?
Well, we can edit ourselves to show up the internet for public access. So
I can say whatever and you can
say. For us, say whatever you wish.
All right.
Yes.
Well, it's not bad, but I just want to make sure. I don't remember the whole line for Italia, but at the end she's talking about how Italy had come back and was looking forward to meeting all of the people. But then they all had turned into assholes. That was really fun. And then the other one that you won't be seeing for a few months is me making fun of my very good friend Clarine Harp, who plays China. And it was actually written in the Japanese text. I kept it because it was so funny. She just says, "Hey, Gendale, China!" Just like that. It was written in there. And I was like, yes, please let me do that. And her line that she says, that's one of my favorites that I've heard, is that I wrote, I think it's "suck my ball." Yeah. Suck ball, that's what it is. Yeah, suck ball, just one. Yeah. That's the kind of comedy I write, people. So there you go.
I think it fits your demographic.
Yeah, that's my demo. Yeah.
Well, since, are there any inspirations for your comedy? Since it's more the Will Ferrell route, or you have the Marx Brothers backing?
I mean, it depends on the show. Mm-hmm. It depends on the show. I mean, there's just funny, anything with great dialogue back and forth. If I'm writing a show that's dialogue heavy, that needs to be funny, you know, I'll watch stuff to just kind of get me in the mood. So I'll watch maybe 30 Rock or South Park or something like that just to see interaction. And then if it's one-liners, I'll, you know, see about watching clips of something or, you know, websites that are funny just to see, like, one-liners that get me in the mood to write. One-liners, if that makes sense.
Get the juices going.
Yeah. Get me creative. Sorry, I gotta watch South Park for a minute.
It's part of the job.
Yeah.
Part of the job.
Okay, this one actually comes from our buddy Golf Bum. He actually is a fanfic writer. Okay. He's kind of curious on what your opinion is on fanfic writers, like how they write, like one of your stories, because you are a writer, mm-hmm. how they might take that story and change it up a little bit with all the characters, or just what's your feelings on the fanfic writing community?
I mean, do it. If that's what you love to do and that's your passion, do it. it doesn't mean anything to me if you rewrite something that I wrote. I mean, I'm rewriting something that someone else wrote, kind of, you know what I mean? I'm just adapting it for an American audience, but I mean, go for it. It's great. Like, if you're doing what you love, do it. It doesn't mean that I'm not good at what I do or that you hate what I do, and even if you do, that's okay. Doesn't mean anything. Not a big deal. We're all people doing what we love, if we're lucky.
Well, now we're on the subject of people.
Yes.
Uh-oh. Oh, yes.
Definitely. Are we going to go dark again?
No, not really. Okay. not really. Actually, I've noticed that a lot of these conventions, a lot of the people who go to the conventions, when they're in the convention, they're very outgoing. They've got a lot of high energy. They're very the opposite of shy.
Right.
But when they get out into the
extrovert.
When they get out into the real world to or their work or their school, they tend to like clam up, go into kind of a little bit of a shell. Mm-hmm. Do you have any advice for these people on how to be more, to bring that convention spirit into their real life and how to deal with it, that?
Well, I think that's, I mean, before that, maybe if they want to leave the convention spirit to the convention, and that would be the, because I can imagine that some people who are a little more introverted and shy save it for a convention so they can really enjoy it. So they might like being shy and introverted. And so I would say be who you are, first of all. If you want to be more extroverted, what is it about the convention that makes you extroverted? Is it you feel more confident, you feel more accepted, you feel more whatever? And take those feelings and bring them with you wherever you go. So if it's the joy, find the joy in everyday life and just roll with it. You know, that would be my advice, just in general. But be who you are. Don't try to be someone else. That's my biggest thing.
Well, what if you came upon a fan who was really being truly who they were, as a huge fan of your work, and you had anyone really just too extroverted, maybe, so it would cross the line of politeness with...
You know, I think there's... Yeah, everybody has a story about crossing the line. But for the most part, the intentions are good. It's well-intended. It's to show appreciation, or it's out of excitement. It's not malicious or anything like that. So it's you know, it can be, all right, I need to take a step back, or I need to talk to someone about this person. But I'm never going to get upset about that, because it's well-intended. You know, and if someone's really excited, you know, if someone's crying when they meet someone, what are they going to say? Suck it up? What are you crying for? Like, you know what I mean? You just let that be. But there's a level of appropriateness that sometimes, and the excitement gets to people. You know, I can't imagine what I would do with, like,
Brad Pitt.
Jason Statham probably is.
Oh.
I don't know what I would do. You know, you might have to pull me off him, and then that's what I'm talking about.
Out.
I got overtaken. Excitement.
You have 5 minutes, so that you guys can get a quick question.
Okay. I know the animation industry has been getting bigger and bigger lately, mm-hmm. and it's kind of been hard with piracy and these other things.
It's lame. Piracy is lame.
But what is your total overview of piracy, and what do you think there's ways for like guys like us to tell everybody out there, hey, stop it, or what?
Well, you're killing the industry. It will be dead and gone if people keep doing it. That's the end of the story. Like, if people keep stealing, we won't have any product to sell, and then there will be no more product. That's an ABC. You know, that's what will happen. So every time you steal, you are killing the industry. So you can't complain about if anything goes down or if there's industry is dying if you're a cause of it. So respect the industry, support it, love it, be a fan, be a good fan, don't be a thief, and then we'll all get along.
Well, so the other part of the question, what would your suggestion be for like us to try to help and stop it?
I mean, stay on top of it. Stay on top of it. Just consistently. Don't pirate, you know. I'm not exactly sure what you guys deal with from that fandom, I guess. But, yeah, I would just communicate. You know, this is what's happening. And everybody knows it. So if they're turning a blind eye to it, slap them in. Slap them around. Tell them what's up. You guys have power. Use it. Good.
Thank you very much for doing the interview with us. This round table.
This has
with
been
surprise
awesome.
Guests.
This is fun.
So, we're here at NonDeskCon 2011. My name is Philip Wesley. I'm with Radio DMG. You're?
Jared Sanchez with HappyTech.net. And Little Local with ERJ Productions.
And we've been here with?
Jamie Markey.
And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the interview.
Oh, no problem. Did anybody last questions?
Any last questions?
Okay, I got a random one.
Okay.
All right.
How would you feel about like strike witches with the jet legs? Would you want a pair?
Of my own jet legs?
Yeah.
I would need lessons, but yeah, I would be up for that. Yeah, for sure.
Those would be the ultimate shoes.
They would be.
Yeah.
They would have to be platforms.
Well, they would design them for you.
Yes. Thank you, guys. This has been really fun.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Have a good convention.
Venture, you're listening to Radio DMG, and there's pee on it.
And
okay, you can go now.
We're recording anyways. But yes, hi, this is Philip Wesley from Radio DMG, and I'm here with
Mike Anthony from Lethurst.com.
And we're here with at NDK 2011 in a hotel room with.
And then William points at Michael Center Nicholas.
William.
Would you say your name was William?
No, Philip.
Why did I... Philip William?
Philip Wesley. The Mile High Mile.
It's the altitude.
It must be. Drink that water.
All right, Daniel.
What? Daniel Craig. Okay.
You have a striking resemblance.
Oh, thank you. Anyways, let's start it out with a... Go ahead.
All right. You've done a lot of voice credits, and you've done a lot of directing credits. You have to choose one. Which one would you choose?
Oh, my... Honestly, I don't want to give one of those, it's like picking your favorite child answers, because I think everyone knows which child is their favorite, but in this case, I think one really helps me keep sane with the other. If I do too much of one, I need to do the other, and it feels like a break from what I've just been doing. I've got to say, as much fun as it is to transform and become another character and play as an actor, there's a lot more... agency and influence you can have as a director, and I feel like when I see a role that I portrayed, I can be proud of it. But I really know that it's certainly in this field, it's really a collaborative effort between the creators, the writers, the adapters, if we're talking about anime, and the voice director, who we heavily rely on for context of any kind. So I feel like it's a different kind of satisfaction for each. And if I've been directing too much with all those responsibilities, once I get into a booth, I feel like I'm on vacation and I'm playing and it's wonderful. But then again, too much of that, and I want to feel like I'm getting my hands dirty and doing something else. I don't want to be lame, but I can't really choose.
That's fine.
He likes to do both of his children.
All right.
Anywho,
man.
So,
Theodore, you have a sick mind.
We can always go NSFW if needed. But, we have a tag for that. But you've worked with Nickelodeon, Cartoon Network, and then anime and stuff. What was it like working with Nickelodeon? I've heard some stories.
Really?
Like horror stories. Any horror stories for Nickelodeon?
Mine, actually, my Nickelodeon experiences have been wonderful. And lucky me, I'm about to embark on another one. I, honestly, in my experience, I mean, there are a lot of things. Each network has their quirks. And their agenda. Nickelodeon is big on one to grow on. There's usually like a life lesson at the end of the episode for most Nickelodeon shows, which is very different than Cartoon Network. They get to be a little more, wackety-schmackety out there. so But when I was doing, for instance, I don't know, Kappa Mikey, it was great. They loved us, we loved them. The show I'm about to do that I can't talk about, but I'm... I wish I could talk about it. I really, 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 really can't. It's like early talks, but it's looking good. It's a children's book series. That's all I can say. But like a like one that I'm that I grew up with and I'm really excited about. So far, it's I really respect Nickelodeon as a network that cares a lot about the content of what they're putting out. It's not just filling space and selling ad time. Depending on where you go, it can sort of feel like that. And I feel like they really are an integral brand. They have a lot of integrity. So I wish I had something sexier and crazier to tell, but it's Nickelodeon's been great, and everyone I've met there's been wonderful. They remember my name; that's always nice. And my name is hard to remember, as you will know, Paul.
Mm-hmm. Like we've talked about earlier, like you've been in the industry for a while. How has it really changed since you first started voice acting?
Oh my gosh! My first start in voice acting of any kind was in anime, and that was like 17 years ago.
There was a Urusei Yatsura?
Oh my gosh. Well, there's that. Urusei Yatsura has come up a few times. You didn't see the dub, did you?
I'm a big fan. I looked it up online, and it was interesting.
And you still wanted to meet with me? Oh my gosh. there were some challenges there. It was the early days, and there were some people involved that just they cared a lot, and they tried to make it something that perhaps it wasn't. There are a lot of things that were firsts on that. I mean, it was... There weren't many things being dubbed back then. Mm-hmm. I owe that whole experience. The first thing I did, actually, was Bubblegum Crisis, just before Urusei Yatsura, and they were like, oh, this kid's great. We should use him for Ataru. And I was psyched. And I was good friends with the Lum actress, and would like watch movies and stuff, and totally bonded. It was really fun. It was an ensemble record, which is still not really done. I know ADV, I think, was it... Ghost Stories? I don't think it was Ghost Stories. It was something else where they tried doing a group record, but they had everyone isolated in different booths. We tried to record it the way they do in Japan, where everyone's in one booth. And it was challenging. It was really challenging. I remember at one point, one of the guys in the cast was a cop, and he was on his lunch break coming in to record part of an episode, and I remember voice acting, waiting, looking around, checking for the next cue, voice acting, looking down at my right and seeing a gun. And voice acting again. I'm thinking, this is an unusual experience. Not usually a live firearm in the booth. But, So changes. Well, now, there are no guns in the booth, whereas there were in the early days of anime. The entire industry, from the business standpoint to the artistic, you know, adaptation process, is completely different. I mean, back then we were chasing tape with Simpty Timecode stripes. Pro Tools was... I wouldn't say infancy, but in its toddler dumbness. This is before Pro Tools 3 was released, and Pro Tools 3 was a massive thing. And this is when, if anyone was an old Mac user, Macs were running Nubus architecture. Oh my gosh. I remember at Southland Studios, where I got my start, thank you Randy Drew for giving me a job, even though I made the worst coffee in recording. Usually you start at a studio, you make coffee for a year, and then they might let you touch a button. I made such bad, crap coffee that they promoted me quickly. That's a hot tip for all you aspiring PAs.
So, go 9 to 5 with the coffee.
Yeah, go full dolly on that. We were using a system. At some point, we upgraded to a system called Session 8. It was made by DigiDesign, which is now owned by Avid. And it was an 8-track that ran on our 486-50 DX2SX, not even DX. And it was really, really hard to do this work. There was also... I mean, this is like a really deep question, actually. I mean, the way things were licensed was very different. I think back then, there weren't as many brokers involved. You would speak directly to the production company, and primarily what they were interested in was not what the MG was for, you know, securing enough upfront money. They just wanted to protect the integrity of the brand. So they wouldn't even license to you if they didn't think you were going to treat it well, you know. Now it's different. It's gotten to the point where I think a lot of productions, even in Japan, are really require some international funding to even get the show off the ground. everything's more expensive. There's less airtime available in Japan. There's less shelf space available, you know, here to sell stuff. So it's become a lot riskier to even do it from a business standpoint, which I think is unfortunate. The other thing is, I mean, artistically, this is where I get on my nerdy soapbox. When I first was an anime fan, there was less of it, and it was really hard to come by. So we really cherished every bit of it. That was pre-internet, you know, pretty much anything. But at some point, I think there became like sort of a glut in the industry of Me Too titles that they thought, this sold well somewhere else. Maybe we'll make more of those and, you know, sell it and make some money.
There like Sailor Moon to Wedding Peach, etc.
Well, I won't name anything specifically. But that's a fine example. And I think anime got diluted a little bit. And you know, there are a lot of reasons now for it doing poorly financially. It's really, really tough for everyone I know in the industry, both in the States and especially in Japan. But I don't know, if there's a silver lining, it'll be that it'll pare back down to just the best shows will, you know, rise up, and it'll once again be really, really, really special. I don't know. I really, really, really love anime, and I really want to see it do well. And I work really hard to try to help promote it and get attention for good shows. But anyway, it's been a challenge. So it's just been a roller coaster. I mean, in the past 17 years, which is not a short amount of time, it's gone from, you know, being profitable. Actually, I remember, it's funny, we're recording this on September 11th. I opened my studio in New York in 2000. A block away from the center of the Twin Towers. And when that all went down, I remember a lot of businesses in my area, I mean, the entire city, like advertising, for one, took a huge hit. And a lot of jingle houses at the time, they would write music for commercials. They just folded up and never came back. Lots of businesses like that, even in recording. And anime, I felt really fortunate to be a part of because, you know, it sort of bucked market trends. It was just, you know, it had a small hardcore fan base, and they wanted to collect, so that kept going. And actually, I was able to not ask for any government
stipend.
No, the word
assistance.
Yeah, government assistance. A lot of businesses in my area, right on my block, actually was like the last block to be unfrozen when they had the frozen zone downtown. And I know there was a church on my block that was getting help. There was a like a one-hour photo mat guy. He was doing terribly. All the restaurants, of course, you know, they had no business, and all the food was going bad. It was terrible. But because, you know, I went in there with a friend of mine who's a cop, and took one of my hard drives so I could continue working at a friend's studio uptown, and you know, was able to stay in business. I mean, I lost a lot of money and gear, but I didn't need to. You know, I was able to let other businesses that were doing worse, you know, get the assistance they needed and not take away from that. Now it's different. You know, margins are much thinner, turnarounds are much faster. It's really, really hard.
Mm. So, since you did bring it up, do you remember what you were doing that day?
Well, yeah, sure do. I mean, this is going to be like the big bummer podcast. All right, September 11, 2001. The day before, I had been working at the studio, and I was working really late. Actually, my mom's birthday is September 10th, so I'd been working hard, went out, took my mom out, celebrated with her, got her home, and then went back to the studio to finish, because I had tons to do, and I thought, oh, I'm so tired, should I stay late or come in early? And I was like, you know what, I don't want to procrastinate, I'm here, let me just bang it out, and then I'll get up a little bit later. And then I woke up in the morning to my friend, my high school friend, who's now a New York City detective at the time. He was a police officer, but now he's a detective. He just came into, we're neighbors as well. He came into my apartment, we had each other's keys, and he was like, I need to grab your phone. A plane hit the Twin Towers, and I've got to, you know, my phone's not working, I've got to test yours. And I was like, whatever, Chris, stop making up stories, just take my phone, I don't care. But even though it sounded like a tall tale, and he's a prankster, it was like there was a disturbance in the force. I just couldn't go back to sleep. So I turned on the radio, and Howard Stern was, back in the old days when he was still in terrestrial radio, he was just talking about this nonstop, and I was like, what the heck is going on? So I get up, all crazy and disheveled, and Chris was newly married, and And he was like, I've got to go to the station. Don't leave my wife. Just be with her no matter what happens. I'm going to get in touch with you somehow. Just stay in touch. We were part of a kung fu school back then. One of our training brothers was just down the street. Actually, strangely, I was on 15th Street. He was on 14th Street. 14th Street was the line for the frozen zone. You couldn't cross the line unless you had a proof of your address being below 14th Street. So I couldn't go a block to see my friend without him coming to get me. So we ended up, I go out with Sheila. This is the morning of, one tower's fallen, one still standing. We go out in the street. It's the most impossibly beautiful day in New York. I mean, gorgeous, clear, not too hot, not too cold. And we're walking down the street, and I remember seeing one tower going, I know that from where we're standing on 8th Avenue, I can see, or we're on 7th then. Anyway, you can see both towers, right? Both? Is one in front of the other? Is one down? What's going on? I grabbed a Bloomberg radio. They had this promotion. They were shipping out free radios to everyone in New York, and it only tuned in Bloomberg. So we're listening to the news on that. People are crowded around cars and taxi cabs, listening to any news station they can get in. Everyone's confused. And I remember standing there with Sheila, and we're looking around. Everyone's sort of in a daze, and we just see the tower start to crumble, and the second tower, and I was glad there was someone there that I knew, because we just immediately grabbed each other and squeezed, and we're like screaming, oh my God, oh my God. And I remember the first thing I thought was, there's no way the people are out of there. Oh my God, there's people inside that thing going down. And then, you know how like in these situations, you'll see something that just sort of takes you out of it, like something that's sort of unexpected. And for me, it was weird to see that with all the smoke billowing out of this collapsing building, it was sparkling. It's something that I didn't really see in all the video footage. I guess it wasn't high resolution enough, but there was so much glass in that smoke that it was just twinkling. So weird. And so I was, you know, about a mile away from the building when I went down. And I know a lot of people that live down there who were across the street, and the stories from them are, I mean, mine's quite at arm's length and fine. And for people who had to listen to people jumping, you know, from the building, it's a whole other experience. But it was also really incredible to be in New York just after that. It was eerie that there were no planes anywhere in the sky, except for the occasional jet, you know, protecting us from whatever, whoever I'm trying to fly or whatever. And then New York got confused and wanted to do something. And before there was an organized effort to you know, get batteries and flashlights or whatever and support the people going down, the first responders. My friends who were Chinese acupuncturists were massaging first responders, and even the dogs, the rescue dogs, they were like doing like a massage and shiatsu on all these people and service animals. But it was also really beautiful to see how New York came together to help people out. And friends of mine who are conspiracy theorists and pretty anti lots of things, government, were literally waving flags and like singing anthems. It was a complete transformation.
Mm. Well, the last question goes to you. Sorry, you had to follow that up.
The question I was saying, like, happy question. So, how has this industry, you know, changed your life? Like, how has it like affected you in a way that makes you happy?
The first time I recorded anything, this is again North Carolina, Wilmington, Southland Studios. Mm-hmm. I recorded, was it the audition for Bubblegum Crisis? The original Bubblegum Crisis? I remember just begging, is it okay if I got a playback? I just kind of want to see what I sounded like. And hearing my voice come out of an animated mouth for the first time, mm-hmm. is life changing. I've recently been working on some shows with young kids. And to watch them, I'm always cognizant of if it's someone's first time, it's going to blow their freaking mind when they see it happen. So I'm always like, hey, want to see what you did? And they come out and do stuff. I just did this movie with John DiMaggio, Whoopi Goldberg, Matthew Modine, James Woods, Wallace Shawn. And this friend of mine who's been in a ton of movies, HBO series, he's a great actor, Otto. He was in Garden State. He was the African foreign exchange student.
You've seen that.
And anyway, so I had him come in at the end of this thing. We needed someone with who could do good accent work. This character's like Guyanese. So he does it, and it's great. And But I knew he'd never done animation before, so, you know, he comes out of the booth. I'm like, hey, Otto, you want to see this? Experienced actor and a cool, cool, cool dude. I hit play, and he just starts spazzing out like a little schoolgirl. He's like, ah, oh, my God, that's so cool. He's high-fiving me. Anyway, that's really incredible. And I was already a fan, so to become a part of these worlds that otherwise don't really exist, other than being a part of building the fantasy, is extraordinary. I used to get depressed after watching anime because I'd be so into these worlds and characters, but know that I could never be a part of them or meet them because they're all fake. They're all made up. And to go a step further, I've been to Japan since then and met the creators of shows that I loved, like one of the directors of Bubblegum Crisis, who I thanked and said my first job in the industry was this, and one of my first OVAs that I was a huge fan of was this, and I even got to play guitar in one of the songs, Rock Me. And he was like, soul. And then he reaches behind a desk and out of nowhere pulls a guitar and says, play. And I was like, what? That was like 10 years ago. But I played a little Rock Me and he gave me a soul. And yeah, it was great. So I get to meet my heroes. I went to AIC Studios and I picked up the Goddess Hotline from Oh My Goddess. They have it there. It's a real physical phone with a sign. And I'm living the dream. I don't have to grow up. I'm a total Peter Pan anyway, so I get to play.
Thank you very much for doing the interview. Yeah. Yes, this has been Philip Wesley with Radio DMG and
Mike Anthony with Letharist.com.
Whoa, and, I thought your name was Theodore.
And
didn't you say your name was Theodore? I've been Michael St. Nicholas. I've been a lot of other people.
Snicky.
That's one of the kinder nicknames I've heard.
Oh, okay. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. Handshaking.
Thank you.
Sound of handshaking.
Yep.
And welcome back to Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and those were our feature presentations for today, November 29th, 2011. We'll probably be back with another quick newsity later this week. We were delayed by a day because, quite frankly, last week we did Radio DMG, Glorious Excess, I was on Cross Border Gaming, episode 85, and we did a newsity show with H-Bomb from Cross Border Gaming. So, yeah, I gave you four shows last week instead of my normal two. We didn't launch Holding the Bridge this month, but we will soon. Still trying to decide what the first episode of that should be, so I guess I will go ahead and use this time to mention that between the two features, we had a little clip from a song from Merry Pixmas, which was a compilation of chip tunes that are Christmas-related, because guess what? Ladies and gentlemen, Christmas time is here. Well, the season time thing, you know, where people talk about stuff and caroling. Luckily for you, I'm not going to sing you any Christmas carols. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to go ahead and use Christmas music. So, there you go. But yeah, that's our episode for today. The name of the show, The Trainwreck Theater, mostly has to do with, I've got my own little frustrations with group interviews, but I think I already covered those pretty clearly on, I think, the first non-Descon show, so go ahead and check that out if you want to know my feelings on those. But, there you go. You can kind of get the idea behind, like, the chaos of these. Sometimes they're fun. Sometimes it just depends what outlet you get stuck with. But there you go. That's the show for today, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you back here on Monday. Or before that, if we have a newsity program. But yes, tune in next Monday for another episode of Radio DMG. We've got a couple more interviews left, and I'm looking forward to it. You should look forward to it. Follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, stalk us via our RSS feed, subscribe to our YouTube channel, subscribe to our Flickr channel, and check out dmgice.com, radiodmg.com, and check out our newest venture, animationisart.com, because once that's up and running, it will technically be the mecca for animation fans here in Denver, or all of Colorado and the surrounding states. So look forward to that. Good night.
this. You don't mind if, like, I record all of what's said between us, right?
I'm fine with it.
Okay, cool.
Look at how we're all getting along, making
Excellent.
Friends.
Before the end of the world.
Joining okay. teams.
Okay, can I really quickly check to make sure that, oh, say something real quick.
Cheeseburger.
Okay, and say something real quick.
Something real quick.
Okay. And I'm just talking a bit so we can see if you can test it. Go ahead and say something.
Hi, how are you?
That type of thing. And
there's a hair in my mouth.
We don't know how that got there.
It came from my bagel or cream cheese.
Exciting. Oh.
It's a small, short one. But it feels more like a fiber than a hair. Because a little short hair in my mouth is not what I wanted this morning.
It's like, okay, let's